Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
The Aryan Alternative. News and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
I'm your host for
The Truth Is No Defense.
After the opening monologue, I welcome you to join the show by calling 609-910-1418. The Skype username to call is SSKIIT. Hello. Welcome to the broadcast. It's Friday the 13th, and I'm happy to be with you here live. Do you still watch television? You know, television is full of race mixing and gratuitous violence, lewd and lowbrow comedy, that I just quit watching television. It's been about 3 years ago since I turned it off. I think it likely that my utter disgust with television led directly to my racial awareness. I suppose that all the time I spent watching television crowded out the space my brain needed to think. Now, of course, there are many more reasons why I don't watch television. The initial reason for quitting television was simple disgust. Now, of course, there's so much more reasons to hate. Like knowing television programming is written, directed, scripted, and often performed by Jews. And even the publications that review television broadcasting are often owned or controlled by Jews. Having the Jews script our news and entertainment, in other words, inform us about our world and nation, is the primary reason, I think, for our cultural disintegration. Often when speaking to racially conscious whites, I mention that I don't watch television. And most agree with my feelings of disgust. Yet, I'm amazed at how few have unplugged their TV sets. Many tell me they don't watch garbage TV, but instead watch the good shows on serious outlets like the Discovery Channel, PBS, and some even say the Weather Channel. Others tell me they do watch garbage TV, along with the good stuff, in order to keep an eye out on the Jew. Well, for those that want to keep an eye out on the Jew, I say your stomach must be strong, or your mental power immense. I really don't think I could hold up. Say what you might, but I don't have the mental power to resist the embedded propaganda which is tailored for each viewing demographic. You see, you're probably like me, though. You don't like to watch garbage TV. You don't like to watch Bill Cosby. And you don't like to watch The Fresh Prince. And you don't like to watch Jorge the Mexican. For you, garbage TV is such an outrage to your sense of morality and your racial identity that it simply can't be stomached. The embedded propaganda for that. That demographic simply can't operate on your psyche. But I ask you, do the blacks and mestizos and, for that matter, the dim-witted whites that watch Cops and Bill Cosby and the Fresh Prince or Good Times or whatever is on TV, do they understand they're being worked over? They're being manipulated, degraded, insulted, even educated, though in a very perverse manner? Of course they don't. They haven't got a clue. But what about the good shows that so many I speak with say they like to watch? Indeed, there are shows that rise above the level of boob bait and monkey shines. This is true. I've seen a number of PBS documentaries, for example, the Frontline broadcasts, that are really quite informative. These good shows, for these good shows, the Jews aren't writing for dim-witted whites or hot-headed mestizos or anarchic blacks. No, they've got to be careful with the viewers of the good shows. What the media Jews accomplish with a sledgehammer for the viewers of the garbage TV won't work with viewers of the good shows. So they use a feather. Subtle, sweet, agreeable messages, socially conscious messages, whispered repeatedly. And they keep whispering them, and they keep repeating them, all with a smile, and everyone's dressed, and no one's ass is hanging out of their pants. But the end result is the same. The shaping of a person's mind in accordance with the Jews' worldview. So, the real reason why I don't watch TV, even the so-called good shows, is because I don't think I have the will to resist. I mean, I have the will, but I don't really think I have the strength. I think these shows with their liberal assumptions and materialistic temptations will affect my mind. I think they will alter my behavior. I think the Jews are clever. I think they know exactly how to whisper corruption in my ear. They can, I believe, corrupt any audience for any show on any medium which they control. I didn't think this way until I stopped watching TV and learning about the Jews. But you know what? I may be wrong. Maybe I exaggerate. Maybe I'm wrong about the their effect on the brain. But you know what? I'm not going to start watching TV again. I'm just not going to risk it. So, I read books. And with books, I can carefully select what ideas I wish to entertain. I can pursue my interests unfettered. And take the time to consider what someone else took the time to write. But even with books, one must be on guard. The Jews' media matrix wants all minds returned to the grid, and they do know how to seduce. Since I buy a lot of books, I'm often sent email solicitations from a big online bookseller. According to their software, I've been categorized as a conservative, and my inbox is filled with solicitations for conservative books. Books written, of course, by Jews. Jews like Mona Charon, John Podoritz, Mark Levin, Bernard Goldberg. This is conservatism? You know, I had to chuckle when I noticed the title of one of Mona Charon's recent books. The title was Useful Idiots. I assume that Charon must be referring to the readers of her books, the ones that pay for her nonsense. Of course, there are a few approved goys listed in amongst these solicitations. You may know a few of them. You ever heard of Newt Gingrich, that great hero for conservatism? Or what about that straight-up, honest guy, Bill O'Reilly? And Sean Hannity, what about him? You know him. He's a real tough nut, right? There was even a time during the Iraq War buildup when I was being sent solicitations for books about Winston Churchill. Books like Never Give In and We Shall Not Fail, books praising Churchill for rallying the British against Adolf Hitler. You know, I thought about this barrage of books recently, and of course, I started thinking about why I haven't been getting very many of these barrage for Churchill books. This Churchill mania, and that showed itself in this solicitations, these sales pitches for Churchill books, started during the build-up to the Iraq War. This barrage was part of a orchestrated Jews media campaign. It sought to draw comparisons between George Bush and the Iraq War and Winston Churchill in World War II, and secondly, between Adolf Hitler and Saddam Hussein. I started getting them first around 2002, and they built up to a crescendo just before the start of the hostilities. The media campaign was so intense that the president's speechwriters sought to complete this analogy between George Bush and Winston Churchill, the Iraq War and World War II, and Saddam Hussein and Hitler, that the speechwriters even clipped a line from one of Winston Churchill's speeches for Bush to recite. Remember the grave and gathering threat tag? That one was repeated a lot. Well, I've read a lot of Churchill's writings, and I've read a lot of serious commentary about the man. And the sketch of Churchill we get from the pulp history booksellers and the electronic Jews media bears little relation to the real man. Look, let me be clear. I don't think Winston Churchill is very popular to listeners of this program or on VNN Forum. I'm not an admirer of Churchill's warmongering against National Socialist Germany. I think Britain and the United States ought to have been allied with Hitler, and every dollar and bullet should have been used to defeat Jewish Bolshevism in the Soviet Union. That didn't happen, unfortunately. You know, for those people that don't like Winston Churchill very much, there is another side of him. Another side the Jews media didn't tell the public, as they were manufacturing public consent for the war against Iraq. This side of Winston Churchill is not attractive, especially for a multicultural America. They really took quite a risk in bringing Churchill up from the grave. But I suppose who's going to find out, right? What the public doesn't need to know about Churchill, they don't need to be told, right? After all, we're supposedly fighting a war for universal democracy. And it wouldn't further the agenda if the public was informed about Churchill's doubts about mass democracy, now would it? The Lemmings also wouldn't need to know that in his exhaustive multi-volume history of World War II, nowhere did Churchill mention the Jews' Holocaust fable. This from the man that was there and conducted the war. The Lemmings also wouldn't need to know that many of his books feature views not politically and socially acceptable in today's diverse and multicultural America, thoughts and sentiments that some would charge are racist and anti-Semitic. Listeners may recall in a previous broadcast that I read from the February 8th edition of the Sunday Herald for the year 1920. I think you should look that up. I also think many here are familiar with that, the February 8th edition for the Sunday Herald of 1920, in which Hitler warns that civilized Europe is being threatened by Jews. Anyway, the more I learn about the real Churchill, especially some of his thoughts and deeds before World War II, the more I like him. In 1899, Churchill was part of a British expeditionary force sent to reconquer the Sudan, an African territory south of Egypt. There, a small garrison at Omdurman had succumbed to a siege by Muslims, led by the so-called Mad Mahdi. This was actually a Hollywood movie. I think it was something about Timbuktu. I can't remember. George Chinese Gordon was the British general that died in this particular event. This is a real historical event. And Churchill was there. This tale of imperial adventure was written by Winston Churchill in his book, The River War. This book, The River War, is available free on the Internet. Though the story is interesting, I mention this book to illustrate Churchill's views on race, which he and his contemporaries, folks, that is, our ancestors, freely expressed without fear of censorship, and they expressed these views on blacks and Jews in the open, in popular newspapers and books. You know, tonight, I'm happy to have James Hawthorne, co-host of Aryan Matters, read selected paragraphs from Churchill's River War. I thought getting an English voice might lead, might give a little bit of ring to these passages. And really, if you get a chance to read these paragraphs, I'll post them on VNN, you'll see that Churchill really was a master of the English language. Anyway, early in the book, Churchill describes three categories of savage one encounters in the Sudan, beginning with the Negroes. Okay, Stan, can you roll the Negroes clip?
The indigenous inhabitants of the country were Negroes as black as coal, strong, virile, and simple-minded savages. They lived, as we may imagine, prehistoric men, hunting, fighting, marrying, and dying, with no ideas beyond the gratification of their physical desires, and no fears save those engendered by ghosts, witchcraft, the worship of ancestors, and other forms of superstition common among peoples of low development. They displayed the virtues of barbarism. They were brave and honest. The smallness of their intelligence excused the degradation of their habits. Their ignorance secured their innocence, yet their eulogy must be short. For though their customs, language, and appearance vary with the districts they inhabit and the subdivisions to which they belong, the history of all is a confused legend of strife and misery. Their natures are uniformly cruel and thriftless, and their condition is one of equal squalor and want.
So that's the Negroes, according to Mr. Churchill in 1899. Of course, this description is true today in Toledo, Ohio, or St. Louis, Missouri, or New Orleans. Let me just repeat that last line when he talks about the history of these blacks. Their natures are uniformly cruel and thriftless, and their condition is one of equal squalor and want. Well, if we weren't paying for them, if we weren't giving them so much money, they would be wanting. They'd be wanting a lot more, but they wouldn't get it if I was in control of things. Anyway, I hope some of you take the time to read this paragraph. Again, I'll post this on VNN. And, of course, you can look up the book, The River War. It's online. Churchill really was a master of the written word. We don't hear prose like that anymore from our talented artists. Really, people can't express themselves in such a manner anymore. Journalists and politicians certainly can't write such things and expect to survive criticism by the Jews' media. Anyway, Churchill continues in his description of the second of the local savages, the Arabs. Can you roll that clip, Stan, on the Arabs?
For more than 1,000 years, the influence of Mohammedism, which appears to possess a strange fascination for Negro races, has been permeating the Sudan, and although ignorance and natural obstacles impede the progress of new ideas, the whole of the black race is gradually adopting the new religion and developing Arab characteristics. In the districts of the north, where the original invaders settled, the evolution is complete, and the Arabs of the Sudan are a race formed by the interbreeding of Negro and Arab, and yet distinct from both. In the more remote and inaccessible regions which lie to the south and west, the Negro race remains as yet unchanged by the Arab influence. And between these extremes, every degree of mixture is to be found. In some tribes, pure Arabic is spoken. And prior to the rise of the Mahdi, the orthodox Muslim faith was practiced. In others, Arabic has merely modified the ancient dialects, and the Mohammedan religion has been adapted to the older superstitions. But although the gap between the Arab Negro and the Negro pure is thus filled by every intermediate blend, the two races were, at an early date, quite distinct.
You know, this description of the interaction between the Negro and the Arabs really could be written about what's happening in prison today, or again, our cities. Let's see, where's this one part I noticed here? In others, Arabic has merely modified the ancient dialects, and the Mohammedan religion has been adapted to the older superstitions of the Negro. But although the gap between the Negro... Anyway, it goes on. This is really what's happening today. A lot of times the Negroes here are adapting this Arabic religion, this Islamic religion, and you get this weird blend of it. And this is really what Churchill is talking about in the Sudan. And now that we've invited them over here, we're becoming a Sudan. You know, as I hear these words, I find it amazing that someone who, like Churchill, who has expressed skepticism about mass democracy and written politically incorrect racial and anti-Semitic views can be so easily remade into a crusader for universal democracy, especially on behalf of a multiracial cesspit like the United States. Really, think about it. All those facts, easily obtainable on race and the Jews, can be excluded from the public relations reprocessing of Churchill's image. Also, Bush can compare himself to the leader of World War II. Really, it's incredible. Notice, too, how gullible the public is. The lemmings really swallow what is fed to them. I don't recall any resistance to the Jews' remaking of Churchill. Not even from the Churchill Society itself. They had to know that Churchill felt this way or had written these things. Really, for the interest of the historical record, someone should have objected. So think for yourself for a minute. Ask yourself, how much misinformation have you accepted as fact when you watch the good shows? And it's not just the big and obvious stuff like we've discussed tonight, but little small distortions which are repeated and repeated until they are digested into the public's consciousness. As long as the Jews control our media, we can't be sure about anything they're telling us. We can't be sure about the news or history is that they're repeating to us and telling us is truthful or accurate. Do you know who Martin Luther King was? Or do you know what's going on in Israel? If they tell you something about these people, you just really have to trust them. And most people just accept it. We, our people, are at their mercy. I'll close tonight with a description of Churchill's description of the Mongrels from the River War. Mongrelism is something we're going to be seeing a lot more of in the Kwa. Okay, Stan, roll the Mongrel clip from River War.
The qualities of Mongrels are really admirable, and the mixture of the Arab and Negro types has produced a debased and cruel breed, more shocking because they are more intelligent than the primitive savages. The stronger race soon began to prey upon the simple aboriginals. Some of the Arab tribes were camel breeders, some were goat herds, some were bagaras or cow herds, but all, without exception, were hunters of men. To the great slave market at Jeddah, a continual stream of Negro captives have flowed for hundreds of years. The invention of gunpowder and the adoption by the Arabs of firearms facilitated the traffic by placing the ignorant Negroes at further disadvantage. Thus, the situation in the Sudan for several centuries may be summed up as follows. The dominant race of Arab invaders was unceasingly spreading its blood, religion, customs, and language among the black Aboriginal population, and at the same time it harried and enslaved them.
Okay, well, thanks again to James Hawthorne of Aryan Matters for reciting those selections. It's really something to think of Churchill. And maybe I'll have a few more words about him from other sources I've read about him. But right now, I guess we ought to go to a break, Stan. And we'll be right back.
Listening to Vanguard Radio.
The problem is for the next generation. That's when the hurt's going to come about.
Let's kick that gringo in the ass! Come on! Let's go!
Hispanic,
United!
They're taking over, and you're a racist pig if you resist.
Go back to Europe!
It's a war. I'm a painter. In the last 2 years, I started buying guns.
You don't make anything better by adding 30 million Mexicans to it, do you?
I'm not going to sit by on my couch and get fat while my country disappears.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to hear from the founder of the Minuteman Project?
I'm going to show you an armed vigilante right here.
These are our weapons.
The reforms in immigration that have completely altered this country had been the result, really, of elite sentiment and frankly, ethnic interest group lobbying and so on.
The Democratic Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of voters. On the other side, the Republican Party sees massive immigration, both legal and illegal, as a source of cheap labor.
There is absolutely no immigration law enforcement, which means we have no borders, which means we have no nation.
If we don't choose this border, again, as the line in the sand, to our own government, about what we the people demand and what we expect from the government, you might as well just check it in and make sure there's something good on TV every night and stay out of their way. Don't do anything wrong, because you won't stand a chance.
The United States government has refused to effectively protect the southern border with Mexico for 40 years. Average American citizens are now banding together to stand up against a government they feel no longer represents their interests. October Sun Films presents The Line in the Sand, documentary by Byron Jost. Visit OctoberSunFilms.com for more information.
The Aryan Alternative, news and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
Free your mind of its alleged thought crimes with Vanguard Radio.
Here's a good stopping point. Okay. You know, while we're on the subject of Churchill, I have a lot of other things to talk about today. And the last book I wrote about him was one by Roy Jenkins. And I really don't recommend any biographies of Churchill at all, because they're all full of so much distortions. And it's not necessarily the Jews, but everyone has a real edge on him, and there are a lot of people who hate him and for a lot of different reasons, and like him for a lot of different reasons, and I'm not sure I can really recommend any biography on him. You can read some of the stuff he's written, though. That I do recommend, especially anything. Just anything I think he's written I think is worth reading. You know, but one of the things, one of the adventures he was on, he really did see a lot of the world, and he went to these places like Africa and Asia, and he was a participant in the Boer War in South Africa, and he got captured. He was on a train that got derailed, and it's amazing he wasn't killed, and they got out of the train and started firing back, and eventually they were taken captive. There were some captives taken. They were put in a Boer concentration camp from which he escaped and made his way all the way across southern Africa to what was then a Portuguese colony. Anyway, it's an amazing adventure, but some people who knew him in that camp were interviewed about him, and they had planned a mass escape, but Churchill snuck out before them and escaped after the plot had been formulated. And a lot of people talked about this that knew him and surmised that he was doing this so he would share the glow all to himself. Churchill really was a publicity hog, and he loved the camera. And he was an opportunist in that way. This was one of the flaws in his character. And this may, to some degree, explain a lot of the opportunism that Churchill, his rapid changes in politics. He switched parties many times. His youth, he spoke a lot about race, and then as these things were not acceptable anymore, he kind of switched. And you know, at one time he was a critic of democracy, and then of course later, as World War II was increasingly defined as a war for democracy, he became a champion of democracy. So he really is kind of an amoeba in that way. Anyway, I do recommend his books, though, a lot. He is really a master of prose and the English language, and he has a lot to say. And usually what he says is pretty smart. But he's a politician, so you can't trust him in the end. There's another fellow I like to listen to quite a bit, and who's on this network, and his name is Peter Schenck. Many of you know he's on Five Nights a Week. And he discusses a number of things, and one of the things he talks about quite a bit is affirmative action and the effect it's had, particularly on the police force. And I happen to hear a radio interview with a person I'm not sure many of you are familiar with. I didn't know who he was, though I had heard of his company. His name was Gary Burnison, and he's the CFO of Korn Ferry International. That's Korn Ferry. I think that's two people's last name, kind of like law firms do. And they're in the business of finding placement for executives, powerful companies that are looking for an executive. They help with that recruiting search. And he was on Bob Brinker's show. He runs a finance show. Brinker is a very sort of establishment type character, but I enjoy listening to him. And he was discussing what's going on in the world of corporate CEOs. And usually I don't like listening to such things, but the topic really was on all this outsourcing and insourcing, and so it was kind of interesting. And there were a lot of callers that were calling up on this very mainstream establishment show complaining about the H-1B visas and the work visas and immigration problems and so forth like this. It was this fellow was not expecting calls like this. But one of the things he talked about, this Mr. Burnison, was that 80% of high-level management executives will be retiring in the next 20 years. 80%. 80% of the governing structure of, I suppose, GE, Exxon, these banks, Citibank, I guess defense contractors, major industries, American industries, even if they're multinational, I guess we can broaden that out, just not just to purely American industries, because who knows what's American anymore. They're going to be retiring, and you can only wonder what's going to take their place. I went to college, graduated a number of years ago, and I'm not impressed by what I saw. And I went to kind of a state school out in the Midwest. I can't imagine really what passes today for an education in the elite schools is really that much better. So you can kind of imagine what the sort of dunderheads and sycophants and idiots that are going to be taking the helm of this company. And not only that, ideologically driven people. People that have been raised in the culture of affirmative action, that has sucked in the air of diversity and multiculturalism. They believe this stuff. And I think there's going to be two sort of currents to watch. One of them, they're likely to run these companies into the ground and further at the expense of probably a lot of American jobs. I'm not sure how much GM and Ford can be attributed, their troubles can be attributed to affirmative action type hiring. But, you know, obviously the management over there have done a pretty poor job. Ultimately, it's their fault. For not doing something right. You know, ultimately, it's their fault. It's the management fault. And I don't think we're going to get any better sort of caliber person in there in the next 20 years. I'd say we're going to get a lot worse. And, you know, this is just one of the auguries, one of the omens. I guess this is Friday the 13th. It's nice to talk about omens. This is one of the things to watch. In the next 20, 30 years. I just wish I was younger so I could, you know, really witness what's going to happen. I think it might be pretty ugly, though, so maybe I'll be lucky. I'll be too old or I'll be dead by the time the worst of it comes. But, you know, with these companies and the demographic changes in the country, it's going to be pretty nasty. Just imagine what sort of people they can get. Okay, the phone number is 609-910-1418, and the Skype username is SSKIIT. Once again, that's SSKIIT is the username, and the phone number is 609-910-1418. I recommend you get the Skype on your computer. It installs easily. If you've got any sort of broadband connection, cable or DSL, you ought to put this on your computer, and you can call your friends and and talk to them really crystal clear, and there's no cost involved either. I want to go over here to antiwar.com. This is a site that has kind of a libertarian feel to it, but they're pretty critical of Israel. And they had some pretty good coverage of the Abramoff problem here. And I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Oh, here. You know what? I'm going to go over to the VNN site. Because it's maybe a section many of you don't go into. I think it's in the Reader Mail for January 13th. And it has to do with this character named Lappin. Do you know who Rabbi Lappin is? He's one of the favorites of the Judeo-Christians. He's trotted out by, who do you listen to these radio shows? Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity. I don't think he's on Limbaugh. But he's one of the favorite Jews that they haul out to say how much they like fundamentalist Christians and how much how grateful the Judeo-Christians should really be towards the Jews. And he tries to convince the stupid goy listening in the audience that, you know, the Jews are conservative just like you are. Well, you know, in this Abramoff scandal, if you've been watching the news, there's already been about 60 congressmen that are implicated in this criminal web. And I hope every one of them loses their seat or ends up in jail. Matter of fact, I have a lot more thoughts and notions about what the fate of our congressmen should be. And it's a lot worse than spending some time in jail, I can tell you that. Anyway, but this Abramoff has connections deep in the Congress, and there's already been a few resignations from Congress, two at least, that have to do with this Abramoff character. One of the things he was doing was siphoning off money from charities to go to pay for war equipment, guns and bullets and night vision scopes and all kinds of things like this for these Jewish settlers that have stolen other people's land. And, of course, I imagine some good Christians have been donating to this. Let's see here. Yeah, let me read from this article. Now that such people as Newt Gingrich have denounced the betrayal of the Republican Revolution and the evils of congressional corruption, what can be said about Mr. Abramoff and his friends Ralph Reed? You know who Ralph Reed is? He's that a little pipsqueak who's a shill for the Christian Coalition. Tom DeLay and all the other pious politicians and operatives and bagmen who have been implicated in Abramoff's schemes. But there's another one, and his name is the curious figure of Rabbi Daniel Lappin. I'm reading here from the Reader Mail section. It's actually the on VNN for the 9th. Lappin is a self-styled authority on the relationship between biblical morality and modern political life, who just happens to be a great pal of Abramoff and Majority Leader Tom DeLay, who has now stepped down because of his ties to the corruption. An outstanding example of this bogus religiosity that has enshrouded this gang, Lappin has scarcely received the notice that he deserves in this scandal, although he has provided many of the most darkly comical moments that have unfolded during this past year. For those who don't know him, Lappin leads conservative organizations that have brought him in alliance with Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, and Michael Medved. I was reading that the assassin of the Russian Tsar, the Christian Russian Tsar, was a man named Michael Medved. I wonder if he's related to this guy. Anyway, Michael Medved, as well as close relationships with Tom DeLay, and, of course, Abramoff. This man of God vaunted for his scholarly understanding of the Bible and his defense of Christian fundamentalism turns out to have served as a money launderer and a fraud man for Abramoff. He was paid by Abramoff's bogus Washington charity, the Capital Athletic Foundation, which passed money along to the wife of Representative John Doolittle. Lappin's peculiar religious charity, which was named Toward Tradition, took in thousands of dollars. Listen to this, folks. Took in thousands of dollars from online gambling. Can you believe that? Look at how corrupt these people are. Any of you people believe that there's a political solution to the problems we're in, that this political structure that we have in Washington, D.C.? Really, any of you believe that a solution can be found through that route? You know, you really have to think. You really have to question that, don't you? So here's all these Christians and this Jew, who's the apologist for the Christians, siphoning money off an online gambling enterprise, which then passed the money to the wife of a Tom DeLay staffer, Tom DeLay, the Congressional Majority Leader. Abramoff showered money on Lappin and his family. See, now Abramoff is a Jew also, by the way. I assume most of you knew that. Abramoff showered money on Lappin and his family, and the right-wing rabbi was not ungrateful. When the ambitious lobbyist needed to embellish his corruption, needed to embellish his resume to impress the overseers at the prodigious Cosmos Club in Washington, D.C., Lappin gladly furnished him with fake awards attesting to his religious scholarship. So here's Abramoff, who I think is a rabbi, going to a prestigious club in Washington, D.C., probably filled with goys who would love to marry into the Jewish line. And Lappin introduces him, reciting these great religious awards that he's been given, and they're all phony. They're all lies. Anyway, in regards to this request for these phony religious credentials, here we get a quote. Quote, this is Abramoff. Oh, this is actually Lappin. I just need to know what needs to be produced. Letters, plaques, anything. Just let me know, Lappin asks Abramoff in an email. Abramoff replies, quote, probably just a few clever titles and awards and dates. That's it. As long as you are the other person to verify them, we should be okay. Do you have any creative titles that I should dip into my bags of tricks? Well, anyway, what Lappin ultimately bestowed on his benefactor was a backdated award from the Toward Tradition, the group he founded to restore morality to America. It named Abramoff as a scholar of biblical and American history. Amazing. Anyway, we've got only a few minutes left in the show. You feel free to call in if you like. SSKIIT. I'm really surprised that there haven't been some callers here for Friday night. I think the forum's quite busy tonight. Let's see how many people are on. 160 people, not bad. Oh, and Hawthorne's on tonight. That was a fellow that read the quotes from Winston Churchill's book. The phone number is, let's see what that phone number is. Stan's real good about sending them to me. Let's see here. 609-910-1418. I was kind of hoping there'd be a number of calls tonight because I'd be willing to, this being Friday night, I'd be willing to go a little bit longer into the next hour. But I don't know, I guess what I have to say isn't that interesting, huh? I don't know. There's another thing that we can think about quite a bit. And, you know, Churchill was an imperialist, and that's a term that is kind of loaded. I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of. He was part of the European expansion into the world. And I think that Europeans, people have a right to rule in a certain way. But I think some mistakes were made in the colonial enterprises in Africa and Asia. And that is, we allowed ourselves to ascribe to these natives certain, we assigned them the same dignity that we assigned our own people. That is, we applied a universality to them. And we're kind of making that same mistake in Iraq today. Although, I think ultimately, as well as probably most of you do, that Iraq has nothing to do about our values. It has to do with protecting Israel. But anyway, that's the justification we're using. But as Europe expanded into these places overseas, there was always a certain segment of our people that wanted to raise these people up and to educate them and to Christianize them. And of course, these were always failures. But tremendous amounts of money and tremendous amounts of lives were lost in this endeavor. And, of course, the whole thing came tumbling down once the Europeans left. And, of course, we all know that while the Europeans were there, local people never had it so good. And now Africa's returning to a sewer. Anyway, what's happening today, as we fill China's banks with our money, they've got to do something with it. And one of the things they're doing is they're expanding into Africa. There's been a number of articles, reports in the newspaper about Chinese wooing these tribal leaders over there in Africa. And you know what? They're developing a good relationship. And I've got to hand this to the Chinese. Maybe we can learn from them in a certain way. They're not interested in bringing their culture over there. They're not interested in reforming these governments. They're not interested in ending corruption. They don't care. What they're interested in doing is getting the raw materials they need to fuel their nation's energy needs. And I think they're going to be quite successful with this. And I think the Arabs, too, are going to like this a lot more than doing business with the United States. Eventually, when we get kicked out of Iraq, the Arabs are going to need new partners. And the Chinese are full of cash. And you know what? The Chinese aren't going to send over uppity women over there who don't want to wear a head veil. They aren't going to allow in. They aren't going to allow in reporters, Jewish reporters that want to embarrass them at every turn. I think they're going to like that a lot more than doing business with Western societies. I suppose after we're bankrupted and poor, we may learn from this. We may learn that we can't make savages into our own people. But I suppose we're just going to have to learn that the hard way. I suspect everyone here on VNN knows that. But the television-watching public, they don't know. They don't know that. That, again, is where we started when we began the show tonight. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. And Stan, roll the music. I'm glad to be with you again. And good night.